Today is May 9th, 2012. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History at 233 South 3rd Street in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Heritage Keepers Project. We are interviewing Lucy Cindy Carnegie Ferguson Ricketson McLaughlin. She was born August 18th, 1931, in New Bedford, Massachusetts. My name is Bobby Faust, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Alex Buell and Gary Edenfield, who will operate the recording equipment. So we will now start the interview. Lucy, I see that you were born in New Bedford, Massachusetts in August of 1931. But that same year, you came down here to this area. Can you tell us about your early childhood and the Massachusetts and Amelia Island, Cumberland Island connection?
Well, my family would go north in the summer to Massachusetts. And in the wintertime, they would come south to Cumberland. So that was my life.
Okay, and where did they live on Cumberland?
Grayfield.
They lived in Grayfield.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell us a little about your mother and your father.
Well, how do I tell?
Describe. Okay, who's your? Give us the names of your mother and father.
My mother was Lucy Carnegie Ricketson. She married Robert Weeks Ferguson from Belfast, Maine, and they had four children: Robert Jr., Ricky Ferguson was Oliver Garrison Ricketson after my mother's brother and father, and Margaret, or Retta, my sister, and me, Lucy, or Cindy.
You were the youngest of the four?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like miscalculation. By 10 years.
Right, we understand. And so you lived at Grayfield, and the famous Lucy Ferguson was your...
mother.
Your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And why was she so famous? What was
famous or infamous depends on who you're, you know, who's looking at. Because, oh, I didn't appreciate it at the time because I thought she scared me. She was very different. She did what she wanted to do, but of course she could afford to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she was a very interesting woman. There's no doubt about it. Not many women would go out and shoot a rattlesnake and skin it, you know. But what else is there to do in Cumberland? No TV, half the time no electricity. You amused yourself, whatever. And it was a farm, Grayfield was a farm, so working farm.
And were there other Carnegies, the other members of the family living
there? Were other cousins, yeah. At Dungeness, of course, Dungeness proper closed in 1925, I think. Was the last big wedding. Then there was Grayfield was the next, Stafford, Plum Orchard, with different relatives. And good Lord, don't ask me to
no, never
go through them all because it's too complicated.
Okay, and did your dad work or?
Well, yes, he came from a nice Maine family. They were in a lumber business. And so he was in the, when he met Mother in New Bedford, they had a lumber mill or something, which I'm sure the Carnegies was not quite NOCD, not our class here. Mm-hmm. However, as my main relative said, however, we may not have had a lot of money, but it was old money. They were very, you know, very proud of that, and they were good people, wonderful people, my main relatives. I don't know them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean,
you never really connected with that part of the family.
No.
Now you were homeschooled. What was that all about? By whom?
Well, there was a rather strange young man who came and stayed with the family, and he was very he tutored me in everything because when I went to real school, I couldn't add or subtract, multiply, and divide, because he didn't like math either. But I was way ahead in botany and all those, you know, anything to do with nature. I shone. I still can't.
So he went with you when you were in Massachusetts and then came down to...
No. Oh, in Massachusetts, okay. And I went to real school.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was only the homeschool on Cumberland?
Yeah.
Okay. So what... When you were on Cumberland, did you have playmates, or were you...
Well, most of my cousins, if they weren't on their Cumberland establishment, or in their Cumberland establishment, they would only come down for vacation. So really, there was nobody, except some wonderful black kids who were my buddy pals, you know, and that, I enjoyed them because they were warm, friendly, and nice. And the white kids were snotty little kids. They really were. I mean, you know, I live in Greenwich, and I live in New York, and la-la. It's a big deal. I live in Cumberland, and these are my friends.
Right.
And I guess if somebody said I was colorblind, I said, well, I guess. What does it matter? I've never fit in down in the South.
I was just going to say it was because you really have Yankee blood in you.
Partly, but the Yankees can be...
True.
Well, if they like you, they like you. It doesn't make any difference what color you are. If they don't like you, it can be very cold.
When that's true. when was your first memory of coming to Fernandina?
Well, let me see. I was pretty small, probably 7 or 8. I really can't remember exactly.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. Big treat for me was to be able to come over on the Cumberland boat, which then I think was the dream, was called the Dream, and by myself without somebody attached to me, and go to, up Center Street, you know, visiting stores. And one store I loved was Allen's store, which was not a haberdasher, a dry goods store. And I could go in and buy my kid. I remember buying my little brown-toed kid sneakers and ribbons for my hair. And Mr. Allen would come out and be so nice to me, and, you know, all the people spoiled me. You know, they didn't see me from Cumberland, and, you know, all that stuff. But it was, the people were nice. And it was fun. You know, I mean, to see people.
Right.
And cars. I mean, we had cars, but most of the cars on Cumberland were, I mean, Grayfield was a farm, tractors and trucks and stuff, and any cars were not like cars up and down the street here, but there weren't that many cars here then.
In the
streets were cobblestone, or not.
But brick and.
Well, no, there weren't. It was before it was brick. It was the
oh, the
ballast.
Yes.
And you'd see
the shells.
Yeah. Horse and buggy, believe it or not, some horse and buggy, and there was a wonderful black gentleman who had a donkey with a hat on with ears coming through the hat and a little grandchild in the back, and they would be selling watermelon or stuff from the farm. Very gentle, kindly folk. Nice, slow time. No loud race.
This was a time when the paper mills just
had
come.
Oh, yes. I remember the paper coming of the paper. The one that's the northern one.
Uh-huh.
I can remember when that went up because we didn't know exactly what it was going to do. And it was exciting because at Christmas time they had lights, Christmas lights.
Oh.
And that was so exciting. Little did we know what they were going to do until years later. But it was, you know, interesting.
Did the population, did you feel like the population here changed or grew?
Oh, I'm
with
sure
it
did. But see, again, I was not here.
Mm-hmm.
So what little I saw of it was, as a child, views going to get candy, you know, or Mr. Allen and the ribbons or something.
Can you remember any of the other shops on Center Street or any of the other?
I remember Tiny Diner, which is now the gallery on Second. Second Street.
Second Street. Third Street.
Third Street.
Yes.
That was the Tiny Diner, which had just plain old-fashioned grits and gravy and, you know, that kind of stuff. Let me see. My memory is a little fuzzy. The Welcome Station. I remember the Welcome Station was like an upside-down ice cream cone. Rosa, what was her name? What was it? The lady that was a Welcome Station. You got fresh oranges and they cut it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was nice.
Were there many tourists here? Or there wasn't?
I'd probably not. Oh, not like it is today.
Yes.
Today's our. I mean, it's different. I'm not against tourists. I know we need them.
Did you? You didn't have any friends then here.
I'm sure there were some children that belonged to somebody that, you know, I got to play with. I don't recollect them. I do remember the recent Edenfield, the Edenfield kids, I was friends with them, but they were in St. Mary's and Kingston. And usually they come over the island.
And we'd to play. Yeah. Well, that would be nice that at least you had some friends.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't. Yeah, but you know, you don't get lonely. Mm-hmm. There's plenty to do. I love walking. I love wandering on the beach. I was always making some weird something out of stuff I picked up. And I'm an artist. I still do that. I mean, I've made all kinds of weird things. One of my, in my really creative, artistic days, I was using bones. And pelvis bones are incredibly beautiful.
They are,
I mean,
yes.
They're a sculpture right there.
Yeah.
They're not always clean when you find them. And, you know, people say, well, where do you find your bones? I say, look up in the sky and say, buzzards. Or downwind.
Yeah, right. Find them.
Can I tell a story about one of my...
Please. Pelvis?
Okay, I lived on 2nd Street... where the little, it's a restaurant now. Well, I had a little gallery, and I had all my sculpture, bone sculpture all around, and this beautiful silver cloud, beautiful car, drove up and parked, and this very nice-looking, gray-haired gentleman got out, and he came in. And he wanted to look around. I said, fine. So he wandered around for about an hour, looking at everything. I saw, and I saw that silver cloud, and I knew that, hey, could want to buy something, maybe. So he finally made up his mind, and he chose it was a pelvis about that big. Oh, that big, I can't understand.
It was about 2 to 3 feet.
Yeah, I'm very ordained? No, that's a minister.
Ornate.
Ornate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, you can tell I'm an old lady. I can't understand. And he liked it, and then he said, oh, my gosh, he said, I've forgotten my wallet. I said, well, that's all right. I figure he's going to...
With that kind of car, yeah, right.
So I said, well, you know, just send me a check. And he said, I have a better idea. He said, my wife and I've just bought a house on the plantation. And if you live on the plantation, I don't mean to offend you, but there are some very nice people there, I'm sure. Anyhow, I went out there, and there were like 20 people there, and it was hanging on the wall. It was covered up with a piece of material. And there were a whole bunch of people milling around. Now, they're excited to meet somebody from Cumberland. That I got right away. I could feel my skin tightening up. And we talked about Cumberland and Grayfield a little bit. And then I said, well, let's unveil the thing. And I want my check. I've already mentally spent my check, you know. And I expected that the wife would be a nice gray-haired, rather plumpity. Wrong. This Barbie doll trophy came down the stairs.
Yes.
And she was absolutely gorgeous, if you like Barbie dolls. Having been a tomboy, Barbie doll was never on my list.
Right.
And she was dressed in silver lamé, something that she'd been poured into. She looked lovely. And so we unveiled it. And she's got, oh, she came from Alabama. I can't do an Alabama accent, but it was, you know, Alabama. Anyhow, she liked it, and she said, well, what is it? And I said, well, it's a pelvis. She said, a pelvis? I said, well, yes. She said, what kind of pelvis? She said nervously. And I said, well, it's a, I can't remember if it was a cow or a horse, but anyhow, I think it was a horse.
Yeah.
And she said, a horse pelvis. I don't want a horse pelvis in my house. And I'm going, oops, there goes the check. And he kind of looked at Barbie. And whatever her name was, and she said, I don't want that in my house. So okay, down comes my beautiful sculpture.
Right.
And I decided I'm going to leave. I didn't really need to stay. So I got in the car and I'm leaving the plantation. I'm not in a happy mood, and I'm afraid I was saying some things that weren't probably. I won't say them. But I have the pelvis next to me. Let's see, I'm driving down, all of a sudden, blue light, and I thought, cop. Well, I know all the cops because I've worked with them, and my son ran the marina back then, so we all know each other. And he said, Cindy, what's the matter? I said, nothing. Well, I see you're waving your hands, and he said, oh my God, he said, what's that? And I said, is it a horse pelvis? He said, What do you mean a Hoa's pelvis? I said, that's what it is in Alabama. He said, just slow down. Go away. Slow down. My adventures at the plantation with my Hoa's pelvis. I'm not sure that this is going to make... This is on the tape. You're going to have to delete a lot of stuff, I'm sure.
We don't delete anything.
All right. Uh-oh. Well, I haven't cussed yet.
No, you haven't. Okay, so let's go back. The child you came here and visited on occasion, and we get an idea of what downtown Center Street was like. At what point did you come here to live? Because you lived, you said you lived in
Fernandina.
Yeah.
Well, I was married to Jay McLaughlin, and we were going to build a house on Cumberland. He and I built a house,
right,
which is very tricky because you have to bring everything over by boat. And the Queen Mother owned the boat and could get on the boat with her permission and et cetera. And so we moved down in 1964, maybe? Right when Stereo 90 came on, so 64. I can remember that. Yeah, the only reason I remember that is that we did have radio. We lived in a tent for 6 years, not straight, but 6 years for 6 months at a time. Then we go north to make money so we can come down and work for no money. And Stereo 90 came on. We'd sit out there under the stars with Stereo 90. Yeah. Or PB. No, it was Stereo 90 because I can remember. Anyhow. It was an interesting time.
How did you meet your husband?
Well, he lived next door to my family in Massachusetts.
Ah.
And, you got to delete this. I would say he was the first person I ever slept with, but not really. Because when we were 6 years old, we had a tent together on joint family property. And I was a total tomboy.
So you knew him from childhood?
Oh, since I was 6 years old, yeah. Yeah.
And how old were you when you got married?
Married. Well, we were together for a while before we got married.
Okay.
And
all
then
right.
I was in my 40s, I guess, something like that.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
And you have children with him?
No.
Okay.
I have my two sons, Walter Seymour Langshaw III, good name, and Coleman Carnegie Langshaw. And then Jay had William Chandler McLaughlin the third. Oh, we have all these thirds
going
on.
Oh
yes, we've got to keep going. And
so you had been married previous to
and
who was your first husband?
Charles Langshaw. Charles Gould Langshaw. Here we get that one too.
And was he also in Massachusetts?
Yes, he was. St. Mark's, Harvard, and Brooks Brothers.
I see. So you had two children with him.
Yeah. Surviving. Yeah.
Yes, and then you went. And where did you live with him? Did you live in Massachusetts mainly?
We lived in Massachusetts, and then we lived in New York, Brooklyn, New York, which was wonderful. I loved it. Where the Veterano Bridge is, I was there when the bridge went up. I worked for Moran Tugs at that point, and that was very interesting, watching that bridge go up. And
okay.
That part of Brooklyn is fascinating because literally one street back from the where all the ships come in, and you will be with Norwegians or Jewish or Italians or French, all different nationalities. It was wonderful. I loved it. He said, but you don't live in New York. And our cousins lived in New York, you know.
Right.
I said, no, much more interesting where I was. They were real people.
Did you feel like there were... Okay, so you built your house here. You moved here in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like there were real people here in Fernandina at the time?
Or I'm sure there were, but we didn't see it. Cause we came up... We bring our truck over on the RW Ferguson, which, alas, we no longer have, and go to get bricks or go to get things. So we didn't really see that many people.
Oh, okay.
There were some people that we did business with, but we weren't socializing. We were just getting the stuff, getting back on the boat.
To build whatever you were building in Cumberland. Now, did that ever get built?
Oh, yes, it got built.
Mm-hmm.
It took us about 17 years, and
then
it got burned down a year ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It was an accident, somebody smoking, and nobody was hurt. I guess that's the best thing I can say.
So you really spent very little time, even in the 60s, here in
Fernandina? Yes, only on business.
Yeah.
I mean, we did have some friends here, to be sure, but usually they came over to Cumberland. More fun for them to come out Cumberland.
So what did you do, other than building this house, what was life like in Cumberland, on Cumberland in the 60s? And
if you go before building the house, when I was growing up at Grayfield,
right.
It was a working farm. My mother, Queen Mother, get up every morning, go out and milk 2 or 3 cows by hand, Miss Lucy. And in the evening, they did the same thing. And not many people knew that. Because, I mean, they just saw, Cumberland, Carnegie, all that stuff. She was quite an amazing old gal. And we lived off the land. We hunted. We fished. We grew crops. Like a good farm. I mean, why not? You got all that land, for goodness sakes.
Yes.
And Grayfield now, we have a wonderful garden at Grayfield. And we eat all the vegetables from our garden.
So, do you spend most of your time still at Grayfield or here on the island? Here on
Unfortunately, it's I no longer have my house. And because of these, I have to stay near the ER.
Uh-huh.
I'll put it that way. And to fly by helicopter is about $8,000. It's cheaper to stay here.
Right.
Much as I'd rather be over there. Getting old has some disadvantages.
So, where do you live now?
I'm a Field Street and Media Park.
Okay. Oh, all right. And did any of your children spend time in Fernandina or?
Well, they do now. Uh-huh. Coleman lives here, and right next door to me, basically, when he's there. And Seymour, we have a farm out near Hilliard. Excuse me. they both moved down here. Couldn't wait to get away from Mother, but it's interesting that they moved down here.
That is interesting. They moved from the north.
Yeah.
Okay. When you were growing up, and you were visiting here, it was during the it was towards the end of the Depression, I guess.
Yes,
by the time
that
you had memories,
I was little.
Right. So World War II, you certainly experienced.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Do you have any memories of either Fernandina or?
Not Fernandina so much. My brothers were in the Navy. My father went overseas with the British Army, and because the American Army wouldn't take him because he was infirm, but the British would take anybody.
Right.
That's right. Even the Japanese wouldn't take him. Lucky. They did get captured, but they
let him go.
I don't think they let him go. I think there was some rearranging of the. Some of the Japanese did not live to see the. I don't know the details, but I gather, I heard it from other people.
Uh-huh.
My father never talked about it, but he came back, so they all came back.
So you really don't have any memories of the impact of the war here?
No.
Let's see. Where did your children go to school?
I was living in Brooklyn, still married to Langshaw, and I had Seymour, who was 7, 8, 9, and Coleman, who was little.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to school in Brooklyn. Packer, the name of it sounds like Packer Collegiate Institute. He was in nursery school, and... but that's the name of the school. And Seymour was in Brooklyn Friends School.
So basically they just spent their summers down here.
Yeah. Well, no, because we're in Massachusetts in the summer.
Oh, okay. So you didn't come down here during those years?
No, we had that nice cold Yankee land to go to.
Okay, yeah, wonderful. All right, well, you were here in the 60s, you told me. Do you remember anything about... what life was like here? I mean, we've talked about race relations a little. Anything about...
You get me started on race relations and religion. You might throw me out.
I doubt it. but I'm just wondering what... Cumberland, of course, was a life unto itself.
Indeed.
But Fernandina had to live with all of the rules and regulations of the time. Do you remember anything about race relations or the politics or anything was going on?
But I'm very... I may have white skin, but I was raised by wonderful black people because we were lucky. Mother could, and they raised me up. They didn't give birth to me. But mm-hmm. They raised me up. So my heart is very warm to all those kind, loving people. I found that, and I didn't realize perhaps as a child, the racial tension. It hasn't changed that much now. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I see people. I watched the parade the other day. And there were very
the Shrimp Festival Parade.
And there were very few, as we say, African Americans now, that were in it. Nobody even looked at them. I cheered. I was the only one. And people were looking at me like, oh, yeah, what's going on? You know, I don't understand it. If you have a brain and you have a heart, what does it matter what your color is or what your religion mm-hmm. is? I get a lot of flack, and I may offend you, but I don't happen to be a Christian. I'm not anti-Christian. I think Christ was a wonderful person. That's why they killed him. I mean, you know, he was going to upset the apple cart. Was it Buddha said, I like your Christ, I don't like your Christianity?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true. I see the good Christians on Sunday, and then I see them on Monday. Same creature. And that's awful to say. And I have a lot of friends who are believe very strongly in what they believe, and that's fine. But they ride me because I'm not a Christian, I'm a Buddhist. That they don't realize that Christ probably learned a great deal from Buddha, as could a lot of people, because it's not a closed religion. It's not a religion. It accepts everybody. It accepts everything. It's not crammed down your throat like some of the religions in this town are. I have a real problem with that. Real problem. I've had to bite my tongue till it bled, literally.
Do you remember any specific incidents or any stories that you can tell us about life here in the 60s? Other than that one incident with the plantation, I can imagine that one.
I think it was a good life for most everybody. I think the people that, what I call old Fernandina,
mm-hmm.
were perfectly content, I believe. I didn't know them, really. Of course, the plantation, you have all kinds of people, and money does not make... money is very helpful, but it doesn't make a person anything but what they are in their heart and their head.
Yeah. Now, of course, the plantation doesn't really get started till the 1980s.
Yeah, that's true.
So, do you have any stories or any incidents that you want to share with us? Anything that you think that it was particularly memorable to you that would give us a flavor for what life was like 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I have to say I've been here in Fernandina for a fair time now. And I find maybe it was because I was raised on Cumberland, which was a very unusual life, that I didn't understand why people, I don't still understand why people act and speak the way, they follow a pattern, what's in vogue, what's in style. They don't think for themselves. They don't dare. I mean, if it's not put out by the Bible, nothing against the Bible, but who wrote the Bible? Men, excuse me. You know, they, I don't know, I'm not expressing it very well here. I just don't understand why people can't think for themselves and allow themselves to hear in their mind mm-hmm. other points of view. It doesn't mean they have to accept it,
right?
But hear it. But they won't. Oh, my Lord. I mean, I have really had to get up politely and leave a room because people were coming on so strong about religion. And I hate to say this, but I really truly believe that religion has done more damage in the world than almost anything. If you don't believe what I believe in, then you're wrong. I mean, my way the highway, right. Whatever.
Did you feel that it was the same 40 years ago as it is today?
It may have been, but not so obvious. Now, we have all these, I want to say belligerent religious things, and they're all nice, good people. I'm not putting, but there's belligerence in the way they express themselves, the way, if you don't agree with them, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's not a question of being right or wrong. You have an opinion, I have an opinion. It's okay.
Right.
But people just get so bent out of shape, and I have a real problem with it. I say I bit my tongue full of blood one day. I just was short of getting up and decking somebody, which was the first thought that went through my mind.
Were you here when the schools were integrated?
Yeah, but I wasn't aware of it because my kids were not in school here.
Mm-hmm.
I see now. I don't know what the schools are like. There's so many horrible things going on in the schools now. This bullying. My
yes.
Lord. I don't understand. The world has become so vicious. And not just because of Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
It's gaining momentum, the viciousness. And nobody can sit and talk. They've got their little diggity and their texting. I tell you, my grandson, I said, look, I'm talking. I'd like to talk with you, not at you. And they don't know how to talk. They do not know how to write a letter. Yeah. I got a handwritten letter from my grandson, one of my grandsons, because I'd helped him buy a truck he needed. And he said to me, Grandma, and he's the only one of my grandchildren who's ever said this, I'll pay you back. And I've heard them say this. I've heard that song, but they know when I kick the bucket, it'll all be resolved.
Right.
And by God, that child, he's now 21, pays me $25 a week. He's been paying me for like two years now. Okay, I like that.
Uh-huh.
And what he doesn't know is I'm taking that money that he's paid me and putting it in account. And when it's paid, I will give it back to him and say, here.
But it's just the point.
It's the point,
yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you think that life was different, or do we just nostalgically look back at life as being simpler, less judgmental?
Oh, I guess it was nicer. I think it was nicer. Kinder.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't mind everybody else's business quite so much as they do now.
You told me that you lived on Second Street in the 1960s. Was Fernandina fairly segregated? In other words, did you... There was the white neighborhood and there was the African American.
And there used to be, and I loved it. You wake up in the morning and you'd hear chickens crowing. Mm-hmm. Like having grown up on a farm, it's a lovely sound. There are no chickens anymore.
No, there's not.
And they had their chickens and their eggs, and those were the black folks. What garbage they had went to feed the chickens. There was nothing wasted. Not like nowadays we throw it all. They don't even have they used to have a man who picked up slops, I guess they were called then, from some of the restaurants to take to feed his pigs. Well, now you don't do that anymore. You just throw it away.
Right.
What's wrong with this picture? I mean, there's so much, I guess it's called, that can be recycled. Feed your, what's that? I don't know. I don't mean to be judgmental because I hate people who are judgmental and I'm being judgmental. Not very Buddhist. Sorry about that.
I think we're going to have to flick it to you.
Yeah,
that one.
The Carnegie, Thomas Carnegie and one of the editors. I'd have to look. Well, they've got it down there. They've got it down there.
Well,
in the book somewhere.
All right.
They used to come here after an evening of pleasure and carousing. And they would spend the night here. And rumor has it, and I don't know if this is true or not, that Grand, their mother, decorated the cells for them because, they couldn't.
Okay.
Maybe they had curtains or something. I don't know. Maybe a mattress. I don't know.
All right. I'm going to start by asking about social life on Amelia Island. Do you have any stories about when any of the family members came to visit Fernandina? Good. And then you can tell us all about the jail and stuff like that.
Well, my father, Robert Ferguson, and Tom Carnegie, they all like their Gretling fluid. They like they have a drink, and they go to the palace. And at one point, I think Palace was coming up for sale something, and the boys thought about buying it. Unfortunately, the ladies with the money decided it was not a good idea. And Fort Clinch was up for sale.
Really?
And they could have got it for something ridiculous, like $20,000 or something. Like, good God. And I'm not sure what they would have done with it. It probably would have been a party place.
Well, we're glad that they decided not to buy it.
Oh, I am too. Lord have mercy, we didn't. The local brothel, I don't know.
Were there those things?
Dina.
Yeah.
Lord, yes. You go out on Old Town, Lady Street. I don't know about.
Yeah.
Way back. The Florida House, the little, if you're looking. Uh-huh. The little building to the left was there was a lady whose name I don't recall, but I do know the story.
I want this on tape. Okay,
we've been.
She, I don't know the lady's name, but she had her quarters in this little house, and apparently the mayor of Fernandina back then used to visit her, and had been doing some. Visiting for quite a few years, and she wanted him to make up his mind whether he was going to leave his wife and take up with her or get out. And he decided he better get out because he was prominent mayor. Oh boy, that says something today. Oh my God. He was leaving, and she was cross, so she shot him. And his black gentleman and the buggy were waiting for him to come, so he, I don't know if he was wounded or dead when he came down, but anyhow, they drove him somewhere else so that he did not die outside of Madam's place. And I got that from a grandson who's still, well, he may not be alive now, but he said, of course, it was a great scandal, and you know, how do you cover up with this?
It's hard. But tell us about the carousing that went on here and the relationship with the jail.
Well, I mean, I guess they carouse so much that maybe they had been asked to leave the palace or had been helped to leave the palace. I don't know those details. And that they were escorted here for the night.
Was the palace predominantly men?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure there were some ladies of some sort there, but not... ladies in the business.
Not generally ladies.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Although, I must say, having lived in Brooklyn, New York, and having met some ladies who... It's a hard way to earn a living.
Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you, I've seen some ladies here in town who are so prim and proper, but they have nothing. I know that sounds strange, but I mean... Don't judge a book by the cover.
So tell us about what happened with Cumberland and the relationship with the National Park Service.
Ah, yes, National Park Service. Well, how do I even begin there? Because I was not privy as it was going on. I was young and old enough to know, but I wasn't. My mother's generation was involved in that. And I guess tax-wise, the tax thing changed, and it all been taxed as farmland or undeveloped. And Camden County wanted, you know, and the state of Georgia wanted to have a park over there because they could have put their causeways, and we would have had McDonald's and all the rest of the cute stuff. So the Mr. Frazier
From the original Amelia Island,
Mr.
plantation
in
Hilton Head, yes.
Was going to save us until we saw what he was up to.
And you didn't want the development on the
No.
Cumberland.
No, it was a very rough battle because he was not, how do I say this tactfully, he was not totally
above board?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. We were able to stop him because he would have, the plantation was meant to be on Cumberland.
Right.
And that was a big, very hard and very expensive battle. Thank you very much. It took a great deal of inheritance to take get rid of him. And, I mean, not that I have anything against the plantation. It's fine over here. We don't need it over there. You know, I mean, to this day, well, I don't have a house anymore that's burned, but I never lock a door. If you wanted to go in the house, I'd rather you took whatever there was than to break the window, because that's a pain in the butt, because you have to take the glass out, come to Fernandina, you know, the whole bit. And even though Jay and I had our own little boat, and we could zap back and forth, and after he departed, I had the boat for a while, but I'm a sailor, and I don't like anything to do with engines. God, no. I almost got killed by the Navy. I come back in my little boat. I know nothing about engines. Give me a boat I can sail across the Atlantic. I've done all this stuff. Okay. The little boat poops up in the middle of the channel. It just goes, that's it. And this little 18-year-old with a gun on a little rubber ducky from the Navy base comes out, and he's standing up with a gun aimed at me. He says, get out of the channel. I said, well, honey.
I would if I could.
Give me a hand. He said, oh, I can't do that. I said, oh. And he said, there's a sub coming. And he showed up.
Yeah.
And they're 600 feet long.
And nuclear
submarine. And they're moving. Well, nuclear doesn't matter. Just the fact. And, you know, well, how do I get out? You know, I do know a little something about ties. And very frequently, there are two ties. And if you were lucky, you can pick up one. And I was able to rock my dead fiddly-dee boat over to the other tide and get out of the way. That submarine would have killed me. I mean, they're going 17 knots and moving. Get out of the way. Mm-hmm. But the little boy with the gun, Henry, help me. Can't do that, lady.
So let's get back to the National Park Service.
Oh, yes. National Park. That seemed a little less of the evils.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have some good people. You'd always a good fellow. He and Mother, Mother tangled with him. He didn't tangle with his loose and open. She would go right up to him and put her.
Yeah. I've forgotten Morris Udall, who was.
Stuart Udall.
Stuart, okay.
Morris, I think, was a brother.
Right, yeah.
And we had quite a few superintendents. Best one was a guy, Roland Swain, an intelligent man. An attractive man, a bright man, very personable, because they don't stay long. And being a superintendent of Cumberland is sort of sideways. It's not a promotion. It's a...
lateral.
I loved him. I mean, he was really nice. We've had some real...
not so nice people.
Well, idiots.
So
I'm sorry. They're a bunch of idiots. And the ones that are there now, God knows where they dug them up from. Are they... they got rid of them from some other thing and put them on Cumberland, and they hate being on Cumberland.
Really?
Yeah. And they are rude. Really
These
rude.
Are the superintendents.
No, these are the people that work at the park. They used to be some really nice park rangers. When they had the horses, they it was wonderful.
So
now they're surly, rude.
Do the park rangers, are they responsible for the horses? Or?
They're not responsible for a damn thing. As far as I'm concerned. And what I really resent, I know they have to be their law enforcement. Now, we all walk around with a pistol on our side, with our hand on the pistol. And I don't like somebody talking to me with his hand on the pistol. And I have said something about it. Well, I'm law enforcement. And I said, I don't care when you talk to me. And they come into Grayfield. And I got really cross. I said, do not come into Grayfield.
Yeah, Grayfield is not part of the Park Service.
Hell no, right? It'll never be part. I'll burn it before it goes to park. No, I don't delete that. they have no business coming in with it, you know.
Right.
And I've said we may have a guest who might be nuts, you know, and they see somebody with a pistol, they might go off the hatchet, you know. Oh, I got a word. I said, then go put it on your car, your truck seat, and you can stand, you know, you can get to it before anybody. And I had to get rude to him. I said, okay, let me put it this way. I'd like to be a good neighbor. We like to be neighbors on this island. But you are now trespassing. In other words, you have not been invited on this property.
Right.
And I'm asking you to leave. And my nephew, Minnie Ferguson, is going like, no, Aunt Cindy. And I said, don't push the old lady. I don't do this very often. But when I get, you know, when I get ticked off, it's with pretty good reason. I said, this man does not have to be in here with his hand on the gun. And I'm being like my mother now, and I realize, oh, my God, I'm being just like mother. But it just irritated me so.
So the Carnegie Fergusons basically deeded over most of the... What happened?
We
what
was given the a thing to the park.
Oh, so so what is the relationship between the...
The park and us?
Yes.
The park owns all around us, and the environmental people whom I have always been environmentalists long before it was the thing to be, are getting on us because we have an inn there, yet they stay there. And they've been very unpleasant. And I mean, I really, when I'm driving up the main road very carefully in my beat up old truck, it's not a Mercedes, which I used to have in another life, and I have people give me the bird, and I will back my truck up and do the same to them. And I have a nice day. They don't know why we're driving on Cumberland. I said, well, first of all, you're on a road.
Right.
The road. And there's a path which I helped cut with a machete so that you guys could walk on the path. No, they don't want to walk in the
path.
Well,
now the Park Service has tours.
Oh, yes.
To the north end of the island, to the little Black Church and to Plum Orchard.
Yes. If they were intelligent, which I think is searching for a word that doesn't run in their vocabulary, they would take people from Dungeness to Plum Orchard, and I think they're starting to do it on the boat instead of going up the main road. They get on us. We have a tour at Grayfield. We have a bird tour. We have a history tour. But it's... We're not tearing up the road, but the environmentalists say it. We, Grayfield, are making it difficult for the visitors to the park. Excuse me. You're a visitor to the park because my family didn't develop it. Thank you very much. And I know I'm being snotty when I say that, but it really ticks me off. It really does. The Park Service is the least of the evils. But I don't like the attitude. I don't like rudeness. I don't care who you are. I don't care.
So who owns Plum Orchard now?
That is the Park Service.
Okay.
And they've done a pretty good job. They've had some interesting people, wonderful volunteers working there, and who do a good job. And then there's some cretins that also work there.
Is the Park Service also responsible for the whole Dungeness area too?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they are. And it's
I mean, basically, so they own
a lot of the island.
Okay, and how did they acquire that? Did they acquire?
They bought from different people in the family, not my immediate family. The Ferguson branch is not sold. We traded some land. My cousin has land right next to my land, and she has three children, grown up children, and the park wanted some land of ours up the further up island, so we said we would trade off that land for my cousin's land, so that we now have my cousin's land and Grayfield land
together. Yeah,
because the environmentalists got all upset about that. I would think they would like us to be in one little thing, but it meant we had more of a toehold. That should be deleted too.
And then, as I understand it, other people who live on the island now are kind of, quote, grandfathered in, and when...
Well, there's that a...
Won't more of it revert to the Park Service?
Oh, yeah, the park will get us all, not us all. They'll get everybody, yeah. They've already begun taking one family that lived at the Grange, which has been the family since... Carnegie's came to Cumberland. They assigned in good faith a lease for 30 years. Well, their 30 years is up, and they're out of the Grange, which is beautiful. And I'm sure that the park will probably have its public lab and where you can buy your postcards. I mean, you know, this wonderful old, ugly but wonderful old house. And then my cousins, they don't know what to do. They can't take care of the property they've got. They cannot take care of it. So what are you going to do with this house? It's got a, he had a caretaker that lived in it, and maintained it all the time. They don't know what to do with it. Well, they said, oh, we're going to rent it to people. Well, my cousins who have been kicked out said, great, we'll rent it back. Oh, no, you have to get in a list. Oh. There are people ahead of you. This family's been living in it for 7 generations.
Right.
Excuse me, is there something wrong with this picture? Or am I just being old city?
Do you have any other recollections? I'm interested in the Palace Saloon, but...
I have some, but I don't know that.
Do you have any other recollections of old Fernandina that you'd like to share? Or the old jail? Or
well, no. I can't really... I'm not much help there.
All right. Yes. Cindy, I just want to thank you for the wonderful stories that you've had to share with us today and the great insights. So on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History, we thank you for sharing these recollections. And this now concludes the interview with Cindy McLaughlin.
Thank you.